Hello, and welcome to Media Ministry at Holden Village. Today's date is August 30th, 2004. Today's session number is DRP 2004-01. Today's speaker is Peter Drury. And the lesson for today is Vocation Discernment in the Bible and Today, Call Waiting. Let's listen in.
Good morning. Good morning. My name is Peter Drury, and this week I serve the village on the teaching staff. I'm a pastor in the Seattle area and love teaching at Holden Village, and even more than teaching at Holden, I love just coming up here and not teaching. But it's a delight to be with you all. I just find it such a thrilling place to be, to hike, to sing, to learn, to share, to talk, to pray. Just a wonderfully refreshing place. So I hope that this Bible study can be a way that kind of invites you into beginning your day, and trust that you'll find something of meaning and depth, I hope, here, and just delighted to welcome you. Let's begin with a word of prayer, shall we? Holy One of blessing, we give you thanks and praise for this beautiful day, this beloved community, and for your world, which you hold in tender care. Deep within our hearts, O God, are the many concerns of this world, from war to storm to pain, from joy to humor to love. And we thank you for embracing it all, O God, and in the midst, calling us forward. Through Jesus Christ we pray. Amen. I'm kind of a fan of sung scriptures, and so when we do Bible study, one thing I'd like us to begin with is singing something from the scripture. So I'd like you to, whether you know the language or not, you're going to be able to leave here today saying, you know, a little something in Hebrew. And this is it. Hine matov umanaim shevet achim gam yachad. Anybody know what that means? It's from Psalm 133. Behold how good and pleasant it is when sisters and brothers dwell together in unity. I'm going to teach you how to sing that. It goes like this. Hine matovu manayim shevet achim gam yachad. Hine matovu manayim shevet achim gam yachad. That's the main part. There's one other part, and we'll wind up doing it in a round. The second part goes, Hine gam yachad. Hine matov shevet achim gam yachad. Hine matov. Shevet achim gam yachad. So, I mean, both of those times, it just repeats itself, and the words are always the same, so let me go over the words with you. Hine matov.
Hine matov.
Shevet achim.
Shevet achim.
Gam yachad.
Gam yachad.
I think I just said it all. Hine matov. Oh, I left that woman. Hine matov umanaim. Did I say that?
No.
Hine matov umanaim.
Hine matov umanaim.
Shevet achim gam yachad.
Shevet achim gam yachad.
And with Hebrew, if you're ever in doubt, just throw a. you know, most of those, the kick is if you study Hebrew, there's nuances to the ch and the ka and the ch. Where it is, but if you just kind of get it in there, you'll be fine. So it goes like this. Hine matovu manayim, shevet achim gam yachad. Hine matov umanayim, shevet achim gam yachad. Let's do that part of the song first here. We'll just do it a few times, so we'll make sure you get it. Hine matov umanayim, shevet achim gam yachad. Hine matov umanayim, shevet achim gam yachad. You got that? So here, same words now. You'll go. Hine matov shevet achim. Wait.
Umanayim.
Yeah, wait a second. Maybe you never sing it. Maybe you, I mean, that's right. That's how the song goes. Maybe you leave out. Hine matov shevet achim gam yachad. Yeah, you don't do the umanayim the second. It's in the liturgy. I mean, I learned it's, that's how it goes. I never thought about that.
That's right.
Yeah, you leave out the umanayim the second time. I don't know why that is. I'll look that up. I'll let you know. So the second part goes, Hine matov shevet achim gam yachad. Hine Okay, so there are two sections of the song that each, you sing it twice, each part. Got it? So you're with me on that? And then it goes in a round. So, I don't know, Holden, they always say stuff like if you got glasses or don't have glasses, if you have open-toed shoes or closed-toed shoes, what should we do? We need to use Clint Hack somehow. Why don't you just go with the one that you like, okay? So we'll do Hinamato. Let's just see what happens. Feel free to split into the one that goes up, and then we'll, let's just, because I trust you, I think this will work. Hine matovu manayin shevetahin ganyamar. Hine matovu manayin shevetahin ganyamar. Hine mato shevetahin ganyamar. Hine mato shevetahin ganyamar. Hine matovu manayin. Hine matovu manayin shevetahin ganyamar. Let's stop, and I'm gonna, half of you identify with Maria, half of you identify, let's, because then we'll just really, I'm not much of a choral director, I'm just a Bible study teacher who likes to sing. So,
I'll leave it for a minute.
Hine matovu manayin shevetahin ganyamar. Hine matovu manayin shevetahin ganyamar. Hine matovu shevetahin ganyamar. Hine matovu shevetahin ganyamar. Hine matovu manayin shevetahin ganyamar. It's especially true with the Psalms that, quite frankly, they're songs. You know, we read them as text, and they're songs. And one of my convictions about biblical study that we'll talk a little bit about this week is that we understand text in context. And text, if you think about that word, it's the root word for textile, for weaving. And text always exists in a context, whether it's a historical context or a cultural context, an artistic context. A lot of the stories of the Bible are really the equivalent of sitting around a campfire and telling family stories. Some are the equivalent of poetry and song. And somehow, when we go to the Bible, sometimes we just think it's this big, thick, intimidating book of text that people like to hit us over the head with. And all text has a context. So we'll sing some psalms this week just as a part of lifting that up. The theme, of course, at Holden this summer is Summon Out What I Shall Be, which is, frankly, a matter of discernment. Who of you have heard the word discernment in a lot more use in recent years? Seems to me to be a much more popular word, for good reason. But I'm not sure that folks especially know what it means. It's kind of one of those words that it's emerged in its vagaries. So let's try to come up with a definition here a little bit together. What do we think discernment is about? Maybe just toss it, you don't have to define it for me, but just toss out either some synonyms or phrases that describe it. Denise?
Knowing what's right and true according to God.
Okay, no, that's right and true according to God. Who else? Discernment, what does that bring up for you?
Thinking through to a point of decision. Yeah.
Okay. Thinking through, and I heard filtering there.
Seeking?
Discovery.
Any others?
Listening.
I love the fact that discernment is emerging as a term in the life of the church. And even I was involved with a nonprofit board not particularly connected to the church, and I heard someone refer to discernment around the mission of the organization. And I thought, well, that's great. And then someone at the table asked them what discernment meant, and I had to stood back. I'm a generous person.
Discerning.
jump in and preach. But I'm delighted that it's making a recovery. Well, we're going to talk about discernment. The other word we're going to talk about is vocation. So help me with that one. That's a word I hear a bit more these days, too. What's vocation? Is that a job?
Calling.
It's a calling.
What's that? What's a calling?
Work we feel compelled to do.
Work we feel compelled to do.
Daily living.
I'm sorry?
Daily living.
Daily living.
Using our gifts.
Using our gifts. Lovely.
Voice.
Voice. We'll get to that. Okay, well, we're going to talk about discernment and vocation. And the way we're going to approach that this week is rather than, I'm not going to take you through some text study each day where we're going to, you know, just dissect a particular verse or chapter or book, but we're going to look at the lives of the biblical faithful, whichever ones occur to us to discuss, quite frankly. There are just plentiful models. I think of the Bible as kind of a faith family album. You know how if you have a family album, and if you're showing pictures of your family, and you'll say, oh yeah, and here's so-and-so, and they're really wonderful at this, and if here's, oh, well, we don't, and then you don't really say much about, you know, and then, well, and hey, and this was the time that we, and there's a picture, oh, and that's, yeah, interesting person, right? The Bible's kind of a faith family album, and it has the stories of a lot of stuff that we're proud of in the tradition, and that enlightens us, and also a lot of stuff that we kind of go, ooh, ah, don't go there. You know, there's some pretty mean, awful stuff in the Bible sometimes. But it's kind of like a family album. It's kind of just got the story. It just kind of carries the story. So I'm wondering, I've got a list of a few folks I want to just toss out there for you here in a moment. But I'd like to ask you, are there any characters in the Bible, when you think about a matter of vocation, or a matter of discernment, or where are you going in your life, are there any biblical characters who have just struck you for how they've done discernment? Anybody leap out to you?
Jonah,
okay, great one.
Abraham?
Well, King Solomon could have had anything, and he asked for a wise and discerning heart.
Okay.
Mary?
Yeah.
Priscilla? Paul.
Peter.
Samuel.
Jesus.
Moses.
Ruth. Ruth. Jonah and Ruth. So you've mentioned my two tops. Ruth and Jonah. I just love those two. How about Esther? Anybody remember Esther? Boy, there's
Miriam.
Hannah. Well, let me give you a little list here. This is where I get to practice with my PowerPoint. I haven't done this before, so I'm learning about a PowerPoint demonstration. And this is just to kind of spice some things up a little bit and give you an idea of just a few people we can talk about. Oh, so many. Just for a moment to kind of just give you a sense of some varieties of discernment and sense of call. Mary, among other things, that just clear sense of openness of, you know, let it be with me according to thy will. I mean, that's a vocationally discerning kind of a prayer. Zacchaeus, up in the tree, hey you! Right? I mean, that's a, get out of that tree. Come down here. Come to dinner at my house. That's a form of call. Priscilla, who Emily mentioned, a real partner in the gospel, a real collaborator and partner in spreading the good news. Job, whose call came out of suffering and seeking and a bunch of friends who weren't very helpful. Hannah, a real devoted heart, devoted prayer. And she made good out of prayer, too. She really followed through on what she said she'd do. Moses, that trembling, you know, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh? I think that's, for a lot of us, a great model of call. Esther, are people familiar with Esther's story? That's one of those books in the Bible a lot of people somehow miss, raised up for such a time as this, that she would really stand up and be present for justice. Jacob is an interesting figure. Can you remember the story of Jacob, you know, wrestling at the river Jabbok? When Jacob is given a new name, Israel, which is the kind of paradigm for faith in the Hebrew scriptures, Israel, Yisrael, means one who struggles with God or one who wrestles with God. And that's the paradigm for faith, one who wrestles with God. It's worthy of some thought. And Susanna. Susanna was accused by a couple of perverted old judges. People remember Susanna's story? Two old judges were watching her kind of through the bushes as she would bathe, and they approached her and, well, they sexually harassed her. And they said, I mean, it doesn't say that in the Bible, but that's what it was. And they said, you know, if you don't do what we want you to do, then since there's two of us, we'll just say that we're witnesses to the fact that you were off with a young lover, and since we're judges, we'll get you accused and executed. And rather than kind of give in to their intimidation, she stood her ground and was a woman of integrity. And then Daniel rose up to kind of represent her, and Daniel wasn't an attorney, but he kind of got their stories clear. And Daniel, people, do you know this story? Daniel separated the two judges and asked them in front of the people, what kind of tree was Susanna under when she was with this young lover? And the one told one kind of a tree, and the other told another kind of a tree. And Daniel started to eke out that you had two totally incompatible stories. But in the end, it's some people maybe read that story and they think Daniel's kind of a hero. Well, Daniel's bright, but the hero, the shero of the story is Susanna, who really is a woman of integrity, who stands her ground for principle, and that's where she receives her call. This is only a kind of a smattering. I wanted to choose both some folks who you might be familiar with and some folks who we're less familiar with, just to begin to open up the idea that discernment and call comes in a lot of different shapes and sizes. It's not just some Nuevo Holden Village thing that we say, well, there are many different kinds of ways of finding a call. I mean, this isn't just the liberal church, well, you can be called how you want to be called, and that's okay. I mean, this is a biblical principle, right? There's a lot of tradition, there's a history to many ways of calling, many kinds of spiritual gifts. So this week, let's see if my little things are working. There we go. We've got some questions around discernment and vocation. There are the classic questions of, you know, is it me, Lord? Are you really, you know, you really calling me? I don't want to be the target. How do I know it's really you? How do I know that I'm listening to God as opposed to listening to something else? And the whole, can't I get back to you later? Those are kind of our opening themes this week on Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday. And today is, we're calling call waiting, a sense of waiting on a sense of call. And tomorrow is caller ID, and that's how do we really know if it's God that's calling? And then the can I get back to you, that's called voicemail. We talk about trying to, at least on my voicemail, you push the number 9 and it saves the message and for a long time. You don't have to get back. And then on Thursday, our topic is conference calling, and that has to do with how we discern call in community, and how in community we participate in affirming the gifts of one another, and coaxing out a sense of call together. And then on Friday, call forwarding, which is how do we move forward, how do we go forth with our sense of call. So that's our focus for the week. I'd like to use some goofy titles from time to time, and so guess where I got these 5. But it seems kind of helpful. You know, before I move to the next step, there's a poem I'd like to share. It's by a woman named Naomi Shihab Nye, and it's called Missing the Boat. I'll read it twice. So, no, I'm one of those folks who I hear a poem, and then I missed some phrase or something, and then I didn't. So don't worry, I'll read it a second time. Missing the Boat by Naomi Shihab Nye. It is not so much that the boat passed, and you failed to notice it. It is more like the boat stopping directly outside your bedroom window, the captain blowing the signal horn, the band playing a rousing march. The boat shouted, waving bright flags, its silver hull blinding in the sunlight. But you had this idea you were going by train. You kept checking the timetables, digging for tracks, and the boat got tired of you. So tired, it pulled up the anchor and raised the ramp. The boat bobbed into the distance, shrinking like a toy, at which point you probably realized you had always loved the sea. I'm going to read that again. Missing the boat. It is not so much that the boat passed and you failed to notice it. It is more like the boat stopping directly outside your bedroom window, the captain blowing the signal horn, the band playing a rousing march. The boat shouted, waving bright flags, its silver hull blinding in the sunlight. But you had this idea you were going by train. You kept checking the timetables, digging for tracks, and the boat got tired of you. So tired, it pulled up the anchor and raised the ramp. The boat bobbed into the distance, shrinking like a toy, at which point you probably realized you had always loved the sea. What does that say to you? Anybody recognize that in any way in their lives?
Exactly.
Exactly.
So often we're not paying attention.
Often we're not paying attention.
Or we have our own vision. We've made up our mind to do one thing and we can't stray that course.
Mm-hmm. Can we give an example of, I mean, don't get too personal and deep. Don't want you to just put your whole life on the table. Can we give it just a simple example of a time in your life when that this poem kind of speaks to? No pressure, you don't have to.
Well, there have been times in my life where I've had this sense of an idea to do something, and I just dug in my heels and resisted. Mm-hmm. But it is so persistent that after time, I finally just surrender, and it turns out that that was the right thing.
Mm-hmm. Denise?
I can think of when my husband and I decided to have a second child. We had been using contraceptives, and like the first month, I was pregnant with Emma, which is really unusual.
Yeah, so you felt like you had a completely different intention and something else entirely worked out.
No, I wanted to get pregnant, and it must have been the right choice just because, boy, I got pregnant fast.
Anyone else?
I can think of real literal times that the only way I could see, like, moving from D.C. back to Nebraska was, you know, driving a U-Haul or, you know, driving a van or something, and then one day it dawned on me, why don't you just mail all your books and fly home, you know, and it was cheaper. And
mm-hmm.
But I just had in my mind the only way to do it was driving across the country.
Well, the lives of the biblical faithful are much, so much like our own. I mean, it's really, quite frankly, a comedy when you read the scriptures about how people became servants of God, how people became disciples, how people followed some sense of call in the world. You're pretty hard-pressed to find the person who was diligent, went to school, pursued the degree, jumped through all the hoops, got the approval of the commission on the ministry. You know, you're pretty hard-pressed to find that person in the scriptures. They're there maybe a little bit in a couple of places. But the lion's share of the biblical characters are folks with all manner of foibles, just trying to figure out and fumble along and get a sense of call. So, I don't know why it is in the modern day that a lot of us in the faith community, in the Christian faith community, and certainly I think in the world at large, we can have this conception that it's going to be clear, we're going to figure it out, we're going to get right there, we're going to go for a week to Holden Village and we'll come back clearly inspired, and we're going down lake, we'll know exactly what's up.
That's what I'm planning on.
Yeah, are you? Okay. By Friday.
2 more weeks.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, well, we'll see where we get by Friday. So again, it's not just a modern kind of liberal church phenomenon to use words like process, discernment, that there are many different senses of call. And I think who said, Nick, you referred to gifts when we were talking about discernment, right? the whole discussion of giftedness and spiritual gifts and having a sense of where we are gifted just factors fantastically into this. We'll kind of get there a little bit this week. So let's try to approach some definitions here. Whoops, I pointed at the screen. I got to point at the computer. I'm learning. I purposely didn't define the term discern, but I want to toss up a couple of words that are kind of related and give you a sense of some history of the word so that maybe we can come up with a working definition together over the course of this week. Because I, for one, am not willing to define it, but I'd like to unpack it. Discerning is somehow perceiving or distinguishing or knowing. The word distinguish is pretty darn close. It's not, discerning isn't really intuition. They're related, certainly, but there's a sense of drawing distinctions or filtering. I love when you use the word filter, because the history is around sifting, to discern, to separate by sifting. Dis, apart, cernere, sift, separate, or perceive, from the Latin. So discerning has something to do with sifting out. Whether you're sifting in the kitchen with flour, or whether you're digging soil and tossing it through you're trying to get the rocks out. It's kind of like sifting. And this other word, vocation, boy, I'm really good at PowerPoint, but I dropped it on the floor. I've got to figure it out. Vocation, again, I'm not defining this on purpose. I'd like us to work towards some kind of a working definition together through the week. But a calling, voice, a way of work, ministry. Parker Palmer, some of you know, has this wonderful book, Let Your Life Speak, and it has a great subtitle that I might botch, but it's something like Understanding the Call of the Voice of Vocation. Who knows? Some of you know that book. Understanding the... It's in the bookstore. I recommend it highly. It's around discernment and vocation. But Parker pretty much kind of what underlies his book is saying that vocation is around finding our voice. And that the word vocatio, calling or summoning, comes from vocare, to call, or voice. And so seeking our vocation, becoming clear about our vocation, is about getting in touch with our own voice, and then allowing, as he says in the title of his book, allowing your life to speak. Rather than to try to micromanage your own life and to get it to say something other than what it's already saying, to allow your life to speak. It's a really fantastic book. Parker Palmer, who's a Quaker educator. He's had a tremendous influence on educators around the country and also on pastors and spiritual leaders. So these are kind of the things we're going to talk about. Discerning, invocation. And I'm going to go back. I figured the least I could do, if we're going to sit inside on a beautiful morning, was to allow you to kind of get a sense of, you know, what's out there if we were all sitting up on the ark. So, a scriptural focus for today to get us going is Psalm 27. If you have Bibles, I'm reading out of the NRSV, but you can read out of any version you like. If enough people have Bibles, we might go around and have people, you know, pop around a verse at a time. Do enough people have Bibles? Why don't we pass? So, yeah, why don't we pass that? In fact, there's Spanish Bibles. You know, we can just, you know, let's have a little Pentecost. Why don't we hand around some Bibles? Okay. And if you don't know how to find the Psalms, let me give you, this is a trick I learned in fifth grade Sunday school. You take your Bible, hold it like this, stick your finger in the middle. Do it, it really works. Open it up. Where did you wind up?
Isaiah.
Yeah, that's probably because yours has the Apocrypha. Look, does yours have the Apocrypha in it? I think you wind up in Isaiah and sometimes Jeremiah can do that. Anyway, if you don't have the Apocrypha in your Bible and you're right to the middle, you should be pretty darn close to the Psalms. But Psalm 27, and I just love to have a person read a verse, you know, verse 1, then someone else 2, then someone else 3, then someone else 4. And maybe we can just start with this end of the room, and no official order. If you feel called to read a verse aloud, go for it. And if two people read the verse, wonderful. Right? So, I'll read verse 1, and then we'll just see who feels called to read verses 2 and forward. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the stronghold of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid?
When evildoers assail me to devour my flesh, my adversaries and foes, they shall stumble and fall.
Though an army encamp against me, my heart shall not fear. Though war rise up against me, yet I will be confident.
One thing I asked of the Lord, that will I seek after, to live in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to behold the beauty of the Lord, and to inquire in his temple.
For he will hide me in his shelter in the day of trouble. He will conceal me under the cover of his tent. He will set me high on a rock.
Now my head is lifted up above my enemies all around me, and I will offer in his tent sacrifices with shouts of joy. I will sing and make melody to the Lord.
Hear, O Lord, when I cry aloud. Be gracious to me and answer me. Come, my heart says, seek his face. Your face, Lord, do I seek. Do not hide your face from me.
Do not turn your servant away in anger. You have been my help. Do not cast me off. Do not forsake me, O God of my salvation.
If my father and mother forsake me, the Lord will take me up.
Teach me your way, O Lord, and lead me on a level path because of my enemies.
Do not give me up to the will of my adversaries, for false witnesses have risen against me, and they are breathing out violence.
I believe that I shall see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Wait for the Lord, be strong, and let your heart take courage. Wait for the Lord.
Have any of you ever had the goal of reading like the whole Bible in a year, or the whole Bible in 5 years or something? Have any of you ever had the goal of having one verse for a whole year? I'd encourage you to maybe try that on. Might be kind of a fan of this 13 and 14 and Psalm 27. I believe that I shall see the goodness of God in the land of the living. Wait for God. Be strong and let your heart take courage. Yes, wait for God. That would be an amazing, amazing focus for like a whole year. Or at least a month or a week, right? You could do that with a lot of passages in the scripture. Sometimes we're so busy to get through it all that something like that is just a principle for prayer and focus and meditation. If you've read the Vietnamese Buddhist monk Thich Nhat Hanh, a bunch of wonderful books, one on Buddha and Christ, Living Buddha, Living Christ, and one Pieces Every Step, and oh gosh, a whole bunch of great books. He talks about mindfulness and taking something as simple as like a traffic light. Like let's say that you don't like missing red light, you know, missing the yellow light goes to red, and you find usually, I missed a light. He suggests that allowing a red light to be an invitation to mindfulness. Or let's say you work in a school and the bell rings about 20 times a day for different things. Well, rather than it just being another bell, allow the bell to be an invitation or a call to mindfulness. And I would use that term mindfulness and encourage you to think about some passage. It doesn't have to be this one. This just, for some reason, this is really speaking to my heart right now in terms of discernment and vocation. But some passage that speaks to you, to allow yourself in moments through your day to not always just be, you know, sitting down and folding your hands or whatever it is. Your prayer form might be playing the flute in the backyard. But to allow a small passage of the scriptures to just inform your breathing and your living and your relating. I believe that I shall see the goodness of God in the land of the living. Wait for God. Be strong. And let your heart take courage. Yes, wait for God. I'd like to tell you a couple of stories to give you a sense of Well, I don't know why, really. But maybe to see if there's something to do with this waiting business and God's call. I serve a church on Broadway, Capitol Hill in Seattle. Broadway, if you don't know it, is perhaps Seattle's most funky and diverse and eclectic street. At least some years ago that was the case. We now have lots of funky and eclectic and diverse streets. But Broadway, well, it's the symbolic center of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender community. It's also a major magnet for homeless youth. It's also a place that doesn't have such strict enforcement around alcohol in public places, and so it becomes, at one time, it was kind of a friendly place for folks who were drinking and on the streets, and at least people didn't harass them for it, but it's become, quite frankly, it's attracted a lot of folks doing that, and so now it gets to the point where businesses start to pull out, and police have to get more serious, and it's becoming kind of a raucous place. I serve a church right in the middle of it and love it. It's great to serve a church in a raucous spot. In fact, the church I serve now is the merger of two historic Seattle churches that have been in their locations for about 100 years. They've had the same address on the street, but they're in ministry in a very different place today than they were 100 years ago. Well, at this church where I'm serving, out on the corner of Broadway and Republican, there's a Starbucks across on one side and a QFC on the other, and Kitty Corner, there's this thing called the Broadway Market that has a variety of shops. And I think because we're a church on Broadway, and because Broadway is such an incredible crossroads, there are people who feel a sense of call to come prophesy at the crossroads. Have you ever been in the urban center somewhere when someone, you know, they've either got their Bible up like this, or maybe... I have never really understood how you can preach to a congregation that isn't there. But you've seen this, right? Well, I think because we're a church, and because somehow people figure out that we're friendly to the people in the community, I'm one of three pastors in this church. I'm the token straight person. My colleagues, one is gay, one is lesbian. And we're an open and affirming congregation, many gay folks, many straight folks. Reminds me a lot of Holden in a lot of ways, and there's a great diversity. We're not a gay church, and we're not a straight church, we're not a transgender church. But for example, when I preach on a Sunday, in the pew in front of me, I might see an elderly woman sitting next to a teenager with spiked purple hair and a nose ring. There might be somebody walking with a surfboard in the back row, and we can't figure out why. And then there's a homeless person and a prostitute and an attorney from Microsoft. And these folks are in the first pew. And then the second pew, right, you've got an accountant and another homeless person. That's kind of who our congregation is. So there's this guy one day just preaching and prophesying on the corner, right in front of our church, screaming all this terrible stuff about all kinds of people. And I think he only just got started with gay and lesbian folks. I mean, he was just all over the map. The prophecy of condemnation of the whosoever's, I guess. Well, most people just, you know, they're walking around on the other side of the street, and one of my colleagues, you know, just kind of, oh my God, what are we going to do? And one day he just said, get out of here. But somebody who people just really lose patience with. Well, I don't remember anymore where I was going, but I know I was in a hurry. And I got across the street, fully dismissing this gentleman who was prophesying on Broadway Republican. And something told me to turn around. I waited for the next light, crossed back across the street. And I just kind of stood for a moment as if to listen to the sermon into the air. And when he stopped to catch his breath, I jumped in. And I said, I'd like to introduce myself. I'm not sure he'd had that for a while. My name's Peter. I'm one of the pastors here at this church. Well, then he got really nervous, because I think he's been saying a lot of mean stuff about that church. I don't think he thought that one of the pastors would come and greet him. And I said, you know, I'm not really sure what to do here, but when you're preaching and you're kind of right on the church property here on the corner, it looks to a lot of folks like you represent this church. And of course, I knew in the back of my mind, it doesn't really look like that. It looks like here's a nutty guy from the court. But I said, you know, it looks like maybe you represent the church. And so I just want to talk to you a little bit about kind of what it is you're preaching about and what our church is committed to, and maybe we could pray together or something. I mean, I could not believe the words. I thought, what am I doing? Pray together, right? Well, he was also a little taken aback and tried to tell me how it was not a church. It was kind of a social club, and he gave me a few descriptions of how he saw this, and I said, well, have you ever been inside? You know, have you ever come to... No, he'd never been, and he wouldn't in the house of the devil. I don't know what he said. You know, I was beside myself. I finally said, well, I'm Peter, and he said, well, I'm Jerry Rose, and he said, well, nice to meet you. And he said, you know, do you want to just come inside the church if you've never been inside before, and maybe we can just take a chance to pray together. And he accepted my invitation and kind of brought his stuff with him, and we went in the door and went through the sanctuary, and then we went on up to my office, and all the time, and he's kind of a big guy. And all the while I'm thinking, why am I going up to my office with this guy? I really should just be like in the sanctuary, and hopefully there's other people around, but I went to the office, and I just said, Jerry, tell me, you know, where's God calling you? Something like that. And so he starts to tell me. I listened to about 20 minutes of who knows what, and I didn't agree with it. But it was interesting to hear his story. And at some point, boy, he was so emphatic about how he had to bring judgment to the world and the condemnation and the turn or burn, you know, all this. And I said, Jerry, do you think it's better if people get scared into relationship with God or if they get loved into relationship with God? And he kind of chewed on that for a bit. And I don't know exactly where the conversation went. But when Jerry and I stopped to pray, we both had tears in our eyes. We both really didn't know what we were doing there. And after we said amen, he looked up and he said, thank you. The love message. The love message. I got to be preaching the love message. And so then we walked out. I showed him the door. He went on his way. And not quite sure where Jerry Rose has gone from then, but he's never stood right on our corner. Sometimes I see him at the Starbucks or the QFC. I'm pleased for him to represent them. That's just but I'll never forget that image of his walking away saying, the love message. I got to be preaching the love message. Now, I'm really not sure why I turned around that day. I had far better, more important things to do. I mean, heck, I'm a pastor. I had a full schedule of important religious obligations, right? I don't know what happened that day. But, so here's the second story. I knew a guy named Chris Morrison, who was an ethnomusicologist. Well, he wasn't really a full-blown ethnomusicologist yet. Ethnomusicologists are people who study music cross-culturally, the music of the world. And he was in graduate school to become a full-blown ethnomusicologist. And he'd done his undergraduate degree in trumpet, and he was going to do his master's and thought he was going to do a PhD in ethnomusicology. And I remember talking to Chris, a year or so into his program, and he kept getting these papers handed back to him that just, I mean, I don't know if they literally had a failing grade on them, but I mean, the professors just didn't accept his work. They just, he wasn't pulling his weight somehow. And he really struggled with that, and then the Society for Ethnomusicology was having a conference on the campus at the university, and somebody knew that Chris did some baking and such, and so they asked him if he might, you know, help bring some goodies together for this event, for the social time and the reception between the papers and the panels and such. And so Chris made some stuff, and quite frankly, he went to town. And he had a full display of some cookies and some cakes and some tarts and all kinds of nice stuff. And people were really impressed, and then we kind of went back, and life goes on. And The next quarter, he kind of continues to get papers back that just aren't really acceptable, or maybe they're kind of C-level, and everybody likes him. He's a really nice guy. He's a fine trumpet player. He has a passion for Indonesian music. But somehow it's not working in ethnomusicology. Well, he gets asked at one of the professors, one of the very ones who gave him an incomplete, I think, instead of a failure in a class to try to give him a second chance, invited him to cater a party at his house. And so Chris catered a party at this guy's house and did cakes and things, whatever. Fabulous. And then the next year, there was another meeting, I think, at another university, and someone said, you know, Chris Morrison over at the University of Illinois, he's that guy, he, you know, he does a great job with pastries and stuff. So he kind of got known to be the guy who would be baking things for these conferences and for faculty and all this. Well, Chris, he dropped out of ethnomusicology. And he wound up going to a pastry school. out in Oregon. He had been in school in the Midwest in ethnomusicology and studied to be a pastry chef. And I remember talking to Chris once about his passion to bake the perfect eclair. He had exquisite detail. He said, you know, he wasn't so fascinated with, you know, all these, you know, wild, crazy, multifaceted, you know, amazing looking. He said, the perfect eclair was really... And he could just go on. And I was enraptured, and I think others were. He had a way of just being passionate about the simple act of baking this wonderful thing. Well, he was also quite a coffee connoisseur, Chris Morrison. And I remember asking him kind of how you prepare the coffee and how you grind it and how you pour it and those things. I'd forgotten everything he taught me. But I asked him once, Chris, what's the best cup of coffee? I mean, what cup of coffee would you want with a perfect eclair? And he said, Peter, the best cup of coffee is that one at 2 o'clock in the morning at Denny's that's been on the burner way too long, but you're with a dear friend who you really want to catch up with. That's the best cup of coffee. Chris was pursuing a call through a lot of wandering means. He's still a musician. He still loves Indonesian music. He bakes some great eclairs. But he's got a passion for food and for people, for community. He can bake the best, for people who are allergic to wheat, he can bake the best wheatless chocolate birthday cake for their birthday you've ever had. He has a passion for food and for people and for community, for connection. My sense is that God works with those in the scriptures, and God works with us in ways which are surprising, ways which are unexpected, ways which call us to embrace our true gifts, and mostly ways in which we let go. We let go of whatever we already have on the agenda, we're so connected to, so focused upon. Ways of letting go. Ways of letting go. I learned this recently about Rowan. Many of you have met Rowan. We just had her first birthday. That, you know how when you stick out your finger and a baby just kind of grabs on and holds? What I've learned is that apparently, maybe you all knew this and I just learned it this year, is that the grabbing instinct, I mean, that just really comes naturally. What's difficult and what has to be learned is letting go. And so in her early months, when she started to learn that she could drop stuff onto the floor and we had to go pick it up and bring it back, you know, we used to think she was throwing stuff on the floor to just watch us play fetch, which, and some of that happens. But really, she's learning to let go. My sense is that God calls us, and that God will show us ways in the scriptures of letting go, of sinking into who we are called to be. May Christ be in your steps this day, and also in mine. Go in peace. Amen. I'm happy to stick around for questions and discussion if you like, but you are welcome to go, and I think there's a kind of a coffee time around 10 o'clock here in the middle. Welcome to Bible study. We'll look forward to the rest of the week.
Thank you.